So I'm going to talk about threshold re-summation for Skorkin community production at the IUC. This is work that I've done during my PhD at Utrecht University in collaboration with Peter Falgari, who's also in Utrecht, and Christian Schwinn, who's in Freiburg University. So this will be the outline of my talk. I'm going to explain why we consider Skork and Guarino production at IUC. And this will lead me to consider their threshold corrections. And we will see that the corrections are very large, so we need to resum them. And I will show how this resummation is in general done by using effective field theory. And afterwards, I will discuss the scales and errors involved in the resummation procedure. And I will then show our results for Skorkin-Guarino production. And I'll finish off with a summary and outlook. So the LUC has was running for about 3 years, and now it's in a dormant phase. And it will start running again in February 2015 at 13TV. It has two multi-purpose detectors there, namely ATLAS and CMS. And the purpose of these are actually to search for beyond the standard model physics. So one of the theories which is generally tested is SUSY, and in particular the model called the MSSM, which is the minimal supersymmetric extension of the standard model. And the MSSM is an R parity conserving model, which means that it has R parity symmetry. This is just a product symmetry where the superpartners have a charge -1. And the usual particles in the sand model have charge +1. This means in particular that the superpartners are produced in pairs. So the lowest order process that you can consider is just a pair production of a superpartner. So on the top right corner here, you can see the cross section for the pair production of different super partners as a function of the average mass. It's a bit, one can see that actually at the LAC, these four processes shown here have the largest cross sections. So the Skork anti-Skork, Skork-Skork, Skork-Guarino, and Guarino production process. What this means, this is also actually what one would expect at the LAC because these are the strongly interacting superpartners, and the LHC is a Hadron collider. For the experimentalists, this means that these processes, if SUSY would be correct, and if the MSM would be correct, then these four processes should be abundant. And this means that the experimentalists search in general for multi-jet signals with missing transverse energy. And unfortunately, SUSY, they have not found these signals yet. They can only put bounds on the Skork and Guarino masses. As shown here, for example, from the ATLAS group for 7TeV. So the red line is basically saying that masses below the red line are excluded at a 95% confidence level. And similarly for the CMS group. What they find is generally that masses of the order of 1TV for Skork and Guarinos are about now excluded. And this is actually an old plot for 7TV. At 8TV, I think the red line has moved up even more, so they're now excluding about 1.5TV. In order to make these plots, the experimentalists need Tarelga predictions of the cross sections, and that's where we come in. We provide these predictions for the cross section. And I want to know that, these plots are actually for just a simplified model. If you would change the model by considering another point in the huge parameter space of the MSSM, then these lines would change. So this would mean that actually our job would be to produce for each point in the parameter space the cross sections, and that's a lot of work. So we need to try to find a largely model-independent technique to produce these cross sections, and so that is why we are interested in threshold corrections, because we will see later that the threshold corrections are largely model-independent. Their structure are basically QCD based. So we are interested in Skorkin-Guino pair production because these have the largest cross sections. And the goal of the talk is actually to try to calculate the cross section as accurately as possible. So we will be interested in particular in the hadronic cross section shown here, which can be factorized in terms of the partner luminosities and which contain the non-perturbative part of the process and the partonic cross section, which contains the perturbative part of the process. Now the partonic cross section is just a cross section for basically colliding two partons, PFP prime, and the inclusive production of the two Suzy pair. So S still and S tilde prime can be either Skorks or Luminos. The four partonic processes that we consider here are shown here. So in particular, gluon-gluon fusion, quark-anti-quark fusion, and the production of skork-anti-skork, and similar for skork-skork, skork-guino, guino-guino pair production. And we also consider their the conjugate process. Now, it has been shown that these processes proceed primarily through strong interactions, and we will focus, therefore, on we will only focus on QCD interactions. The electric interactions have been shown to be about contribute about 5 to 10% to the cross-section, and we will not take them into account. So the cross-sections for these processes are known analytically at leading order since the 80s, and at next leading order, they're only known numerically, and they have been implemented in the program called Prospino. Now, from the previous slide, we've seen that the Skorks and Gluminos are in general heavy. So we are here considering just the basically heavy pair production process. So it's very interesting to see what is the effect of the contribution of the threshold region. So again, we are interested in the following partonic processes, where PMP prime are partons and the S and S tilde prime are Skorks-Guinos. And the threshold region is a region in phase space where the two incoming partons, shown here, they are collinear and they have just about enough energy to produce the two outgoing Suzy particles. So this means that in the center of mass frame, you have two fast-moving collinear partons which collide, and then they produce two slowly moving super partners which have a non-relativistic velocity that we denote by beta. And I want to note here that we denote by big M the average mass of the two Suzy particles. Now, close to threshold, when beta is very small, it's known that there are two classes of enhanced corrections to the cross section, namely soft logarithms, which arise from the exchange of soft gluons with moment of the order of m beta squared. So these are denoted by the red curly lines here, and these contribute terms of the form of logs of beta. So when close to threshold, when beta is very small, these are very large. And another class of enhanced corrections are those coming from the exchange of potential gluons with momenta shown here. These are gluon exchanges between the two outgoing Suzy particles. And these exchanges contribute terms of the order of alpha s over beta. So again, when beta is very small, close to threshold, these are very large corrections. Yeah, no, that is true.
Are these still the most important corrections there, or are these really
No, but I mean, if you consider the whole range of beta, then it's true what you say that around beta is equal to half. But I mean, when beta is, let's say, between 0 and, let's say, 0.3 or so, then these are the dominant corrections.
Okay.
I mean, actually, I will show that in the in a slide. Okay, yeah, that coefficient there is not known to me, but I think it's just beta, so beta. But okay, it's true what you say, that there is a very large contribution far from threshold as well. But I will come back to your point later. So to just give an idea of the corrections that we are taking, that we are considering, if you consider here the Fourier scattering amplitude and then the one loop correction is coming from gluon exchanges, you get these six graphs, these six diagrams shown here. And if you now take the momenta of the gluons of the order of m beta squared, so basically soft gluons, you'll find that these corrections contribute terms of the order alpha s log square beta and alpha s log beta. So these are the soft logarithms. And if you now consider these diagrams where the gluons are have momentum of the following form, then these diagrams contribute a term of the order alpha s over beta. And
this is all probably known for pairs of top production, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this plays a role as well in top.
So, you know, is it possible just to translate some of this correction from the pairs of tops to, say, pairs of loops? Is there a simple way of doing
this? Yeah, there's a very simple way. Because so these corrections are indeed also, basically the only thing that you have to use is that So the two produced particles, they have to be strongly interacting. That's the only thing that I'm using here, actually. Then they have a...
So just naively, the tops are at around 400 GeVs of total S.
Mm-hmm. So I guess
So what I'm trying to get is probably, in this case, with the smaller correction, because your alpha
Yeah, I mean, I guess, so for tops, it's not, if you consider top production at the LHC, these, it's in general far from threshold because, okay, so you're looking at 400 GeV total mass and the partonic center of mass energies of the order of, it can range up to 8 GeV. So the threshold region is not as big a part of the phase space. But for Skorpion Gluminos, where the mass, total mass is like 2 TV or higher, then the threshold region becomes a bit larger and these corrections become a bit more relevant. But these corrections have been calculated for top pair production at the Tevatron, for example. So if you now consider higher loop corrections, so basically more loop corrections with the soft and potential gluons, then the corrections are in general of the form of log, higher powers of logs of beta and higher powers of inverse powers of beta. So again, when close to threshold when beta is small, these are very large. So you would have to actually calculate all these corrections close to threshold. And this means that the perturbation series breaks down close to threshold and you have to perform resummation. Now, I note here that these corrections are, they only depend on the structure of QCD. So they appear for tops, scores, Gluminos, and so their structure are basically the same in all standard model extensions. So it makes sense to try to calculate these, and I will show how this is done. Now, close to threshold, instead of expanding the partonic cross-section in terms of perturbation series, or writing it as a perturbation series in terms of alpha s. One in general writes it in terms of a perturbation series in alpha s log beta and alpha s over beta. And then the partonic cross-section can be rewritten in the following form, where there's a factor of the two-level cross-section times terms containing powers of alpha s over beta times an exponential of the soft logarithms. And then one speaks of leading log, next leading log, et cetera, with summation, depending on up to which, which term one takes into account in the exponential. So in my work, we have performed a next leading log with summation. So we have taken these two terms into account. Now this is for the partonic cross section, but of course for the hadronic cross section, one integrates over beta. So one also traces over regions where one is far from threshold. So one can ask if it's also relevant to perform your summation far for the hadronic cross section. And I will try to show that it's also relevant for hadronic cross section. I repeat here that hadronic cross section, so I've rewritten here in terms of integral over the velocity beta. So close to threshold, beta is zero. And in these two plots, I plot the integrand as a function of beta. So this is for quark anti-quark, quark to quark anti-quark, and for gluon gluon to quark anti-quark, both at 14 TeV. The blue line are the exact next leading order correction, and the red line is just the soft logarithm correction and the Coulomb corrections. And so close to threshold, let's say 0 to 0.3, one can see that they coincide. That's also what one expects because they're, the threshold corrections there are the dominant ones. But also far from threshold, one sees that actually the threshold corrections, they approximate the exact correction quite well. So this is coming back to what you mentioned, that indeed around 0.5 one has the large corrections, but still these threshold corrections takes them relatively well into account. So also for hadronic cross-section, one can, by taking the threshold corrections into account, one can get a very good approximation of the exact cross-sections. So this has been done since the 90s. The soft logarithms have been resummed, and separately, the Coulomb corrections have been resummed since the 80s. And recently, a technique has been developed by using effective field theory to resum simultaneously the soft and Coulomb corrections, and they have been applied for quark anti-quark at next leading log and top pair production at next leading log. So we will try to apply this technique for quark and gluon pair production at next leading log. I'll show in the next few slides how this is done by using effective field theory. One knows that there's a hierarchy in the scale ranging from the hard scale M to the soft scale n beta squared. So because of this hierarchy, it makes sense to use the effective field theory framework. In the process that we're considering close to threshold, there are four relevant modes, namely the incoming collinear partons, the hard modes, which taking the call the hard process. And then one has also the final states, which have potential momenta, and also soft gluon exchanges. And also, I note that there are these potential gluons being exchanged between the final state. Close to threshold, the hard modes decouple, so we can integrate them out. And what one finds is just two effective field theories, namely NRQCD, non-relativistic QCD, and soft collinear effective theory, SCET. Now, and then the contribution of the hard modes are taken into account by hard matching coefficients. So these are the two Lagrangians for the SCET and the NRQCD effective field theory. The exact form is not really relevant for this talk, so we'll not go into it. So now that the hard modes have been integrated out, we want to integrate out the potential gluons. So this has been done as well, and what one finds is the PNRQCD Lagrangian. So one is then left with the SCAT Lagrangian, which takes into account these interactions between the soft gluons and the potential final states, and the Pinner-Cassidy Lagrangian, it takes into account the interaction between the soft gluons and the collinear. Exactly the other way around. So the Pinner-Cassidy Lagrangian takes into account the soft gluons and the potential final states, and the scalar Lagrangian takes into account these interactions. And the total effective field theory would be just the sum of these two Lagrangians. So one still has the coupling of the soft gluons to the, oh, and I also want to mention that, so the potential gluons have been integrated out, and this gives us a non-local effective interaction between the two final states. The soft gluons can be decoupled by performing the following field redefinition. And it has been shown that at leading order, this leads to a Lagrangian where the soft gluons don't decouple anymore to the incoming states and the final states. So this is true, this is correct at leading order in beta, but so it would mean that for next linear log summation, one can just use the sum of these, the SCAT and the Pinner-Cassidy Lagrangian. But for a next linear log summation, actually one would need the beta suppressed term. But it has been shown that the beta suppressed term does not contribute a next linear log, which means that for a next linear log summation, one can just use the leading order SCAT and Pinner-Cassidy Lagrangian. Okay, so to come back with what we are interested in is the cross section. So in other words, basically the amplitude. The amplitude and effective field theory framework is generally written as the sum over matrix element of production operators. So in this example, I just take the most simple S-wave operator, which is the production of the annihilation operator of the two incoming collinear states and the production operator of the two potential final states. And after performing the field redefinition shown in the previous slide, the operator becomes as follows. The soft gluons are then basically decoupled, and they are taken into account in the S shown here. So these S's are just actually Wilson lines. And if one plugs this in to the matrix elements, one finds that the amplitude can be factorized in terms of a factor containing only the collinear states, and a matrix element containing only the potential final state, and a matrix element containing the soft gluons. So on the diagrammatic level, this means basically that you have a very complicated diagram, and this soft decoupling shows us that we can write it in terms of the hard matching coefficients times a diagram containing the potential gluon exchanges and a diagram containing the soft gluon exchanges. For the cross section, one just squares the amplitude and integrates over the phase space. And one then finds that if one basically redefines some of these functions, that the partonic cross section can be rewritten in terms of a hard function H, which contains the hard matching coefficients, times a convolution of a potential function J, which is the matrix element of the potential states, potential final states, and the soft function W, which contains the Wilson lines of the soft gluons. Again, on the diagrammatic level, it is shown as follows. So the Coulomb contributions are contained in the potential function J, and the soft logarithms will be contained in the soft function W. And this is above threshold, and below threshold one also has actually bound state effects, which we take into account by in the potential function J. Now this factorization formula, it has been shown to be correct for next leading log and for next leading log summation for S wave as well as P wave processes. And the strength of this formula is that it's largely model independent. The only process dependent thing comes in the hard function H, which has to be calculated. So now that we have factorized the partonic cross section, we can perform the summation by noting that the functions in the previous slide. So the hard function, the potential function J and soft function W, these all live in their own scale. And one can then evaluate them at their natural scale and then evolve them by using the RG equations to the common factorization scale mu F. And then we convolute with the PDFs and then we find hadronic cross section. And in this way, one naturally resums logarithms of ratios of mu F, the factorization scale and the hard scale. And one also resums logarithms of the ratio of the factorization scale and the soft scale. So one sees that if one takes the soft scale of the order of m beta squared, one then naturally resums logarithms of beta in this way. And the Coulomb corrections are contained in the potential function J, which, so above threshold, when the relativistic kinetic energy E is bigger than zero, the potential function can be written as follows. So close to threshold E is of the order m beta squared. So this factor here is alpha s over beta and one. So one sees that this contains the corrections of the order alpha s over beta. And below threshold, one also has bound state peaks, which are captured by these delta peaks. And finally, so the only process-dependent term that we need are the hard functions. These depend on the hard matching coefficients. And these are known, or recently known, have been calculated for all the relevant, four SUSY processes that we consider at one loop. Finally, the scales and errors involved in the resummation procedure. So I mentioned that the functions that we have, they all are evaluated at their natural scale. So the hard function is living at the hard scale m. The soft scale is taken of the order of m beta squared, the basically the order of the soft gluons. And the Coulomb scale is of the order of m beta, which is the scale of the Coulomb gluons. And then note that we also attach some coefficients kf through ks. And we naturally take them as default, we take them equal to 1. But by varying them, you can get an estimate on the theoretical errors involved. So in our work, we have varied these coefficients between 1/2 and 2. And furthermore, there's also a parameter which we call beta cut, which we introduce it purely in order to cut off the running of the soft scale, or else one would hit the Landau pole. And then we vary that parameter around a window of 20% in order to take into account the ambiguity of choosing beta cut. And then there's also parameterization error. Namely, one can express the partonic cross-section either in terms of the relativistic kinetic energy E or of the non-relativistic velocity beta. So close to threshold, these are basically the same. So E becomes m beta squared. So one can, so close to threshold, there's no problem. But far from threshold, there's an ambiguity in how you express the partonic cross-section. And we take this into account as well. And then there's finally also errors involved with the Parton distribution functions and the strong coupling constant. And errors that we'll show, we do not take these into account. So the results that we'll show are for the matched cross section. So note that matched, I don't mean here the same as matching when it comes to effective field theory. But what I mean here is that take the next leading log resum cross section, we extract its expansion up to order alpha s, and then we add back the exact next leading order cross section. And in this way, we are sure that the matched cross section is exact up to next leading order, and then we are interested in the corrections beyond NLO. Okay, so in the following slides, I will show the results that we found. We resum both the soft and Coulomb corrections at the next leading log. So these plots are for the K factors for each of the four processes. The K factor is defined as the ratio of the match cross section defined in the previous slide and the fixed next to unit order cross section. So one can see, for example, as a function of the mass M of the Skorkin Guibinos. And I must note that in these graphs, so the Skorkin Guibino mass have been taken just equal to each other. For each process, we show three lines. The blue line corresponds to our full resumed cross section, where we take the soft and Coulomb corrections into account. The purple line, we do not take the bound state effect, bound state corrections into account. And the red line, we switch off the Coulomb corrections. So first of all, what one can see is, that the lines go higher. So the corrections become higher as one increases the mass of the Skorkin Guibinos.
But the total number of events goes down quite quickly, right?
Yeah, so that is, one has to, so that is true. So that is why there's probably like a middle ground there where it's
the effect is slower and slower, right? As you push towards higher and higher masses, the effect of the depends that you produce a slower and slower, right?
Because the cross total cross section becomes
because
smaller.
Because of the cost and energy, right?
Yeah.
Fixed, and that's one of the corrections that you
have. Because it becomes slower and slower. Yeah. Basically, the region of threshold becomes relatively larger in the whole phase space, yeah. So that's why the corrections are relatively larger as you increase the Skorkin Guibinos masses. What one sees also is that the Coulomb corrections, the difference between the blue and the red line, can be larger than the soft corrections. And second of all, that the total corrections can be very large. So if you consider, for example, Guibino-Guibino production, the corrections for large masses can be of the order of 150%. Yeah, so
say if I would have some Guibino spork as the lightest supersymmetric partner, for example, right? Or its decay time is delayed, right? Once you produce a bound state, it will annihilate, right? I mean,
yeah.
What I'm trying to say is that,
so that the bound state.
You would have different procedures depending on what happens. I mean, whether to include the bound state.
Yeah.
Say if you have a stable R hadrons going, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you would not include the bound states because
yeah.
They will not
okay.
Contribute to R.
Yeah, so what we have implicitly assumed here is that the width of the Skorkin Guibinos are larger than the width of the bound states, so that they decay before that they annihilate and you have two photons or something. So we do assume that the that the Skorkin Guibinos decay separately. Yeah, that is true.
Just out of curiosity, do you know if the pairs of photons from, say, annihilation of Skorkin and Skorkin bound state, say it's long lived, but they can annihilate, is it a detectable signal?
I think that is a signal that they in general don't search for. I don't know if it's detectable or not, but I think in SUSY searches, that's a signal which they will probably miss or so, I think.
There are papers talking about this, I think one made by Schwartz and Galicia, among others, but I think that's one example. But as far as I know, the proposal is that it's a small enough signal that it's something you'd want to go after with, from an inverse perspective or MLHC data.
I'm just interested if you can do better than our hadron search.
Aside from the model dependence, those are awesome. Those are much more sensitive than the missing energy searches.
No, not missing energy. The two photon
Yeah, sorry. What I'm saying is that if, for the same mass, it's easier to see the gluino if it's an R Patnel than if it's
a gluino, yes, of course, because
a spork
and a spork pair can annihilate the quarks. I don't know, but gluino is like a bound state, you know.
My understanding of the hierarchy is that the easiest thing to see is an R Patnel. Just pair produced in the exit of the detector. Second easiest is the missing energy signals. Most of those they search for. And the hardest is these odium annihilation. I think they looked at sporks too. People have looked at sporks as well as gluinos. Yeah, obviously diphoton is easier than dijet.
Yeah, so
here we were interested in basing multi-jet signals, so we implicitly assume that they decay separately.
But I guess this stuff would be extremely relevant to these onion production rates, right?
Yes, they are.
That might be a different implication.
Yeah.
I don't know what the state of the art is for the calculations people are using for those analyses.
Yeah. I mean, I know that these Coulomb corrections are taken into account there, I think, as well.
A fourth generation, you can apply to fourth generation as well.
Yeah.
Fourth generation tops? Or?
Yeah, top prime.
I think this has been done recently, if I'm not mistaken. Or this is ongoing, if I'm not mistaken. So here I show a contour plot of the K factor. This is for the total Suzy production process, so where we add all the four relevant processes at ATV. So along the horizontal axis, the gluino mass and the squirk mass along the vertical axis. And I've also added an old exclusion bound from ATLAS at 7TV. So at 8TV, I think by now this has moved up a bit. But I just added here just for an indication. What one sees is that, generally for masses around this region, the correction are of the order of 40%. And that the exclusion bound goes through regions where it is relatively high. So it would be interesting to see what these corrections have, what the effect of these corrections is on the mass bounds. So this has been done for the soft logarithms. So for next reading log cross sections where they take into account the soft logarithms, but not the soft organs and the Coulomb corrections. So we still hope to convince experimentalists to do that. Finally, the uncertainties. So again, for all the four processes, for equal squirk and gluino masses in this case, the blue line indicates the uncertainty of the next log resum cross section. The red line, the uncertainty of the cross-section where we switch off the Coulomb corrections. And the black dotted line is the uncertainty of the fixed next reading order cross-section. So one sees that the uncertainty is plus minus 10% for actually all the four processes. And it's actually, it reduces. So if you take these corrections into account, the uncertainty reduces from, let's say, about 20% to about plus minus 10%. So this is very nice. This is another reason to perform your summation. Not only the corrections are relatively large, but also the uncertainty is reduced. This is, of course, what you would expect because you are just taking higher order terms into account in the perturbation series. So also the scale variation should reduce. We have implicitly just plugged in gamma equals to zero in the previous plots. We have plugged in gamma equals to zero in the previous plots, but it was actually implicitly, like we assumed, as you said, that the width is actually of the order of 1% such that they still decay separately. So in the next two slides, we were interested in what happens if you increase now the width of the squirks and gluinos. because that, yeah, we know that score continuous ADK in all phenomenological models. One can take their finite rate into account by changing the effectively the energy E to E plus I gamma. And what this does is that the bound state peaks are smeared out. This one can see, for example, here for the Green production process, I plot here the inferior mass distribution. Now below threshold, the threshold here now here is at 2000 GV. And below threshold, when the width is very small, you have that these bound state peaks. But when you increase the width, the inferior mass distribution is smeared out. So that's one effect. Another effect is that above threshold, the soft logarithms, instead of being of the form logs of beta, they are now of the form of logs of beta plus the finite width. And the Coulomb corrections are similarly not anymore alpha over beta, but alpha over beta plus gamma over m. So this means that close to threshold, these singularities are now shielded. They don't diverge anymore. One can ask, okay, what is, if you now take the finite width into account, how does this change our previous results? I show here a plot of the relevant widths as a function of the ratio of the Greenhouse quark mass. So I remind you that here we do not take any electroweak particles into account. So you have only the scoring Greenhouses. The heavier one decays into the heavier one. When the Galvino is the heaviest one, then the squark, so then the Galvino will decay to the squark. So you see that as you increase the Galvino mass, the squark Galvino, the width corresponding to the squark Galvino process, it increases, and the width corresponding, which is relevant for the Galvino process, also increases. So we have now taken the width into account, and it's shown in these plots. Here I show the ratio of the next thing you log cross section, taking the finite width into account over the cross section when the finite width is just set to zero. So that is then the red dotted line. And the green band indicates the error involved with the finite width, the error involved with the zero bit cross section. And the red band is the error involved by taking the finite width into account. So for a squark anti-squark, for example, when you make the squark heavier, then you see that, the ratio is still inside the error. So it is then for them, it is just enough to just set the width to zero. You can just use our zero bit result. However, for Galvino, for example, if you make the Galvino heavier, at some point the red band will depart the green error band, which means basically that at around, let's say, the ratio of the finite width over the mass is about 5%, then at that point, you have to actually take the finite width into account. So it's not enough to just set the width to zero. However, for the total SUSY reduction process, there it doesn't matter if you set the finite width, if you set the width to zero or not. This is shown here where I vary again the Galvino's quark ratio, mass ratio. The red dashed line is the K factor when including the finite width, and the black dotted line is the K factor when one puts the finite width equal to zero, and then one sees that they are just basically overlapping and well within the error band. So for the total SUSY production process, one can just neglect the finite width. This is also what one would naively expect because if you, for example, look at the region where the Galvino is heavier, then the squark is stable. And actually, then the squark production process has the largest contribution to the total SUSE production process. So for the future, we want to extend our results to non-degenerate squirt masses. So in this case, we have taken all the flavor masses equal. And more importantly, we want to perform a next to leading log re-summation. And we want to then compare it with another group which performs the re-summation not in with effective field theory in momentum space, but actually in Mellin space. The ingredients for next to leading log re-summation are all known except non-Coulomb Green's function, which is now underway. Just for a taste, I show some partial results at next to leading log. So the blue line is again the K factor for the total SUSE production process in this case, where we only take the soft corrections into account. The red dashed line is the next to leading log soft correction, and the purple line is the total next to leading log correction. And then one sees that if one increases the mass, the soft correction at next leading log becomes bigger than those at the next leading log. But more importantly, it's the uncertainty, actually. The uncertainty, it's again, the blue line is the next leading log result, and the red line is the next leading log. By going one higher order re-summation, one sees that the uncertainty is reduced, I would say quite a lot. So we are very much interested in what will happen if one not only takes the soft correction as we've done here, but also the Coulomb corrections. So to summarize, we have seen that the correction on the total SUSE production process can be anywhere between 15 and 40%. And the errors are reduced about plus minus 10%. We've also seen that the Coulomb corrections can be large and even larger than soft corrections for some processes. So it means that you cannot resum them separately, you have to resum them simultaneously. We've seen that the finite width effects can be set to zero. The finite width effects are very small as long as the width is smaller than 5% of the average mass. It would be interesting to find out what the effect is of our corrections on the mass bounds. And I want to point out that all the plots that I've shown here can be reproduced with the grids that we've put online. And finally, we are interested in the corrections at next leading log. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
On one of the previous slides, I think I just did this when we talked about you said something about three loop cusps. There we go. Okay. Three loop cusps.
So these are known now actually. Yeah. For next leading log, you will use. We use the one loop and two loop cost phenomena as mentioned.
Have people learned any Gannett Sumero summations for a week?
Yes, people have done this. They have done it for W pair production. Mm-hmm. And I think they have then recalculated the mass when taking these corrections into account. I do not remember how big the corrections are there, but I think they are smaller than for strong corrections. I think they're probably of the order of 10% or so.
And you commented that this approach is general in the sense that the only thing you would change for other mechanisms of production would be changing the hard positions?
The hard matching.
So naively, I saw that if the weight goes to infinity, so which means when the particle is produced, it decays immediately. then the Coulomb correction will vanish.
Yes, but they do, well, they should matter because they go like alpha S over, I show it here. So they go as alpha S over b to the power 4 plus gamma over n. So when the bit becomes very big, those corrections should vanish.
You mentioned this theta cutoff parameter earlier on. So what that was what presumably what choice of theta cutoff you use affects whether the whether these finite corrections are visible or not, right? So in a sense, aren't they doing they're cutting off the same divergences. Obviously they're different visibly.
Yes, that is but we use, that I remember correctly, we use the same beta cut. I guess what you can do is basically cut it off at the finite bit. But it's still, but that would be very, that'll be very small. I mean,
so your beta cut is larger than
it's
what?
Much larger, yeah, because we want to make sure that we can still perform perturbation theory.
Okay.
So actually, m times beta cut squared is still of the order of 100 GeV or 50 GeV. So it's in general much bigger than the finite bit. Yeah.
Okay, so
the are there other questions? Carlos? you're thinking very very hard there.
Right.
Oh, thank you.